So this morning is going to be a continuation of an adult forum that I had back in Lent, where we talked a little bit about, we were going through the Sermon on the Mount, remember? And each clergy person here did a different session on a different segment of the Sermon on the Mount. Mine was on anxiety, so I chose to talk about Sabbath. And I found when I was teaching that session that it really felt very limited, like I was just kind of scratching the surface of everything that there is to say about adopting Sabbath practices in your life. So this is going to be a continuation of that one session. And for the next 3 weeks, we're going to be talking about Sabbath in three different ways. Today we're going to talk about Sabbath in the home. Next week will be Sabbath economy, Sabbath in our society. And third week is going to be on Sabbath worship. So I invite you to kind of stick around for all 3 weeks to kind of get the full scope of all of this. How many were here for that session that I taught? It was like 3 or 4 weeks ago on Sabbath. Was anyone here for that? Okay, a few people. For those that weren't here, I was using as my resource this book called Living the Sabbath by Norman Wirzba. And in it, he really sets up the theology of Sabbath, the understanding of where Sabbath comes from in our faith, and how practices throughout the Bible sort of described how Sabbath was for God's people from the earliest of days, and how we have shifted into a very different understanding of rest and play in our society now. So that's kind of where this began, and if you would like to read this book, you can borrow it or write down the title. In talking a little bit more specifically, though, we don't want to leave behind the concepts that Norman Wirzba taught. And so I'll start by saying, we have two important concepts of Sabbath that he teaches in this book, where he looks at Old Testament scriptures and kind of pulls out two Hebrew words, menhuah, which means the rest, tranquility, serenity, and peace of God. And that concept, those of you who were here last time will remember that when God created the world in the 7 days, and on the last day God rested, often we interpret that as to mean all of the work of creation was God's goal, that even, you know, in getting to the 6th day where humankind was created, that was the summation of all creation. That was the culminating point. Wirzba is making the argument that that's not true, that in creation, the 7th day, God rested. That was the goal. Sabbath rest was the culmination of all of creation, not the creating of all of the world and animals and human beings. And so that menhuah concept is this rest and peace of God. That is what God aims for God's self and for all of us, for all of creation to culminate in rest. So rest in this context is not just simply what we react to after we have done something exhausting, right? It's a completely different understanding of Sabbath. We are aiming to get there. And so that menhuah is a gift that we all have been offered to receive. And then this second concept that's on the slide there is hesed, which Wirzba interprets as God's covenantal creative love. That God is always working within the world, even if we don't see it, and even if we are sometimes distrustful, that God is at work in the world. That God's hesed, God's continuing creative love in the world, is always creating for us opportunities to rest. That sort of like pulling everything back, trimming back all of the overgrowth in our lives and finding a way for us to attain that menhuah, that sacred, holy rest that God calls us to. So that creative love is always working in our lives to provide us with blessings so that we are able to rest. And the work that we have to do is to kind of get out of God's way and allow for the Spirit to speak in our lives so that we might see the opportunities when we are given Sabbath. Does that all make sense? I'm offering these concepts because I think it's important for us to look at Scripture in a very in-depth way. And Hebrew words have a lot of layers of meaning. That's why there's so many translations of the Bible. We have lots of different ways that people will interpret one word, has several different meanings. So this is a very weighty theological concept, both of these, that I want to offer to you. We talked back in February, March, about how Sabbath is defined in the biblical culture, that it was something that was impressed upon everyone to do. It was just simply what you did. And Jewish communities today still practice Sabbath in this way, where everything stops. But we and the Christian church, and I think also as people who live in the secular world, where we have kind of a continuing flow of work and we have a continuing flow of demands on our time, have a real struggle with just stopping everything and doing Sabbath. So I want to talk a little bit about that. I want to talk about our relationship with time as it is now, and in kind of the feet on the ground ways that we are prevented, and I think that we even prevent ourselves from taking Sabbath rest. I'd like to start with talking a little bit about how communities are simply designed in this day and age. It used to be that work was not something that you went off somewhere to go do. Work was a part of home life. Whether you had a farm or if you were, part of a community, the sort of being in kind of a small village, work was done at the home. You fed the chickens. You went out and milked the cows. You went to work in the fields. You, brought in the harvest. Those are the activities that we think of when we think of work, really. Our society now is not set up that way. We don't, not many of us have farms. Does anyone here have a farm? In my first class, there was a visiting couple that were farmers. They were from Albemarle, and they were all excited about farming. So I don't want to assume anything. but now, most of us have home and work physically separated. So work is something that you go and do. And in fact, most of our lives are compartmentalized. Activities are assigned to a location, right? You go to the gym to exercise. You go to a restaurant to eat. Or you go to a grocery store to get food. You go to your office to work. And then home is sort of this place of rest. And for some people who are brought by many of those different things to be out in the world all the time, home is really the place where you go to sleep, to collapse. And I was even talking about this with someone who was a young professional in a big city. I want to say it was Georgetown outside of D.C. and was complaining about the cost of real estate and how he was renting essentially a room, a studio, and all he did was really come there to sleep. He might read a book, he might eat a bowl of cereal, and that was it. He didn't host gatherings at his house. He didn't do work at his house. He had an office, he had a gym, he had restaurants, he had friends to go see. You know, like, work was sort of out beyond. And how funny a concept that is, that we really see our homes as a place where we completely collapse after a very long day. At least that's what I do. There is also a sense in our pace of life that prevents us sometimes from taking Sabbath. It feels like there is just simply so much to do all the time. And rest becomes as the result of exhaustion, the result of producing work, and then you rest to recover from it. And I have to say that there are many ways that this is simply part of what our society is and what our families are in this day and age. But I would like to argue that this simply isn't sustainable for us to constantly be in a practice of go, go, go all the time. And then third, I think a little bit, our relationship to time as a commodity. To be in a position constantly where you are speaking about time in a very cavalier way, and maybe even in a burdensome way, that time is just sort of this constant stressor to get things done. And even being in time as, I wish I could just collect more of it and like keep it in envelopes in my desk and take out time when I need more of it, which is so divorced from the original concept of time as God created it, as a gift. Is anybody guilty of talking about time kind of in this way? How many of you find yourself sitting down with a friend and they ask how you are and you just simply say, I am so busy. That's the first thing that comes out of your mouth. Am I the only one? Yeah. And sometimes I'm almost a little bit proud of that because I like being busy. And on some level, it kind of makes me feel important. So I want to offer this short video to help us, to help us think a little bit about our language of time and how we have divorced the concept of time that really God created as a gift to a completely different understanding of time. Let's see. She did move really fast. So, she really highlights, I think, how we can toss out our words very easily about time and about really our lives and how we end up spending our days, not very thoughtfully and not really very intentionally. What I would like to challenge us all, myself included, to do in the next few weeks is to think about time intentionally as a first step in getting ready to take a practice of Sabbath. I don't know about you, but I had a very weird Lent this year. I about 2 weeks into Lent, I think, a really good friend of mine died. And he had been struggling with cancer for a couple of years. And he died very young, and it was a very tragic death. And so it interrupted my entire practice of Lent. My husband and I just sort of suspended every single one of our spiritual practices and fasts that we were really thoughtfully doing. Normally, I would really be into Lent. I really love taking on spiritual practices and the challenge of them and everything. And this year, I just simply couldn't. It just wasn't, it was a time of grief, and it was also a time of hunger for resurrection. I don't know about you, if anyone else had kind of an interruption to their Lent like I did. But I've been thinking a little bit about maybe taking on an Easter practice, that this year, Easter might be the time. And as you know, we celebrate Lent for how many days? 40? How many days do we celebrate Easter? 50, exactly. My husband likes to say we go longer for Eastertide than we do in Lent, so we feast more days than we fast. That's right. Lent doesn't include Sundays. If you don't include the Sundays, it adds up to 40 days. So technically, you're supposed to, if you're fasting from something on Sundays, you're supposed to actually enjoy breaking that fast on Sunday. But some people like to go all the days. Well, anyway, the practice that I was thinking about taking on in Eastertide was one of Sabbath, but I find this really intimidating. I find that my life has a lot of stuff in it, a lot of obligations, a lot of people that depend on me to do things, and a lot of moments when I just simply need to drop everything and manage a crisis. And those are situations that we all have in our lives. But this is going to be a baby step in thinking a little bit about doing Sabbath. When we consider the next 50 days, we look at our calendars and we think about how we could possibly have within once every 7 days have a day where you don't do any work, however you define work to be. I am a little intimidated by that, but I also think it's doable. I think it's something that could be done almost as a challenge and as something that we could feast on. That's that concept of menhua, that rest, tranquility, ultimate peace of God. That is just such a huge gift that God has given us. And sometimes we refuse to sit at that table and feast upon God's rest. So the challenge for us today is to think about resting as a spiritual discipline. And this has to come from changing the narrative. The narratives of our lives are all of those words that she put up there on the video. You know, words like busy, crazy busy, super busy, and even killing time. There's a poet, Wendell Berry. Are any of y'all familiar with Wendell Berry? He's fabulous. I really recommend him to you. And he writes a lot about the environment and about God's relationship to people and our relationship to community. And he once wrote that to talk about killing time is blasphemy, because time itself has been created by God as this holy gift. And for us to walk around kind of tossing out that I'm not doing anything with my time but kind of killing it, it's an insult to God. Which definitely, you know, like she said in the video, stops you in your tracks a little bit. It interrupts your thinking in, huh, I'm not really seeing my own life and the time that God has given me as sacred. So, I would like to offer a small practice that can help us in creating this sense of intentional Sabbath feasting in Eastertide. I would like you all to adopt a practice of saying yes and saying no, the spiritual practice of saying no. I want you to think about some things in your life, what takes up the majority of your time. If you were here 3 or 4 weeks ago, we did kind of a pie chart of how our days looked. Does anyone remember what you put on that chart? What fills up your day? meetings, death by meetings sometimes, work, sleep. I heard two people at the same time. Carpooling takes up a lot of time. What did you say? Family. All meaningful, important things that all need our intention. And nothing that we could sort of reject from that list. Are there any things that take up your time that are not really worthy of you? Your phone. Yes. I was actually going to say Facebook. I've thought about giving up Facebook for the last few months. I've just been overwhelmed by just scrolling and scrolling and going on kind of like click, click to different things to see, you know, stories and things that people post. And before you know it, 2 hours has been wasted. She gave up Facebook for Lent. Yeah. I was listening to a podcast yesterday. I was driving back from South Carolina to see my family and listening to a podcast from the series On Being. Is anyone familiar with the On Being podcast series? It's through NPR and it's hosted by Krista Tippett. And it's all about all the different people that she interviews have different contributions to society. So she has theologians and artists and actors and all sorts of people that she has these really deep, meaningful conversations with. And she interviewed someone who was talking a little bit about how she grew up Jewish, and she takes a technology Sabbath in her family. For 24 hours, they don't use any screens whatsoever. So, you know, no TV, no phones, no social media, no email. And they will even put up, you know, away messages and things like that. And I'm sure they have some kind of way if there's an emergency that someone could call. But so for 24 hours, and this person, and I confess I can't recall her name. She's a web developer, social media pioneer. So she's constantly online. She has all of this work to do online and all of these gadgets in her house. And a lot of us are addicted to gadgets. We like, you know, having things to play with and have immediate connection with other people. And she suspends all of it. And she has young kids at home who hate it. But they work to kind of redefine what does it mean to have time together and how those things can really suck time. Is there anything else you can think of that maybe is taking up your day that is not worth your life? Any other examples? Worry and anxiety. Good answer, yeah. Yeah, I find that when sometimes when somebody sends me a mean email, which happens occasionally, I will sit and worry over it and will be unable to go to sleep at night even. We'll be sitting up worrying. So there are things within all of the burdens of life and all of the obligations of life, like meetings and carpooling and the things you simply have to do that you can't just sort of outright reject without, you know, kind of a major interruption. There are things in our lives that take up time that we can fast from in order to get closer to Sabbath. I like baby steps in my spiritual life because I think I am a little intimidated sometimes with how overwhelming it can be to completely change my habits and completely change my schedule, and I really resist spiritual disciplines, but I know I need them. So I'm a big fan of baby steps, and this practice of saying yes and saying no is a good baby step. Think of one thing that you could say yes to this week that would bring you great joy to get to say yes to. Maybe you have noticed, you know, there's stuff going on here at St. Paul's that you want to get involved with for the first time. Somebody's asked you to serve on a committee. You know, maybe you want to volunteer with Kids Cafe. Maybe there's, you know, some sort of ministry in the community that you want to get involved with, and you would just love to say yes to that. Think on what that could be, and then also think, what could you say no to this week that would be something that does not necessarily add to your life? Maybe it's something that has taken up more time than it needs to. Maybe it's an unhealthy kind of psychological practice of worry or anxiety, or being with someone or something that is sucking a lot of your energy and your time that needs to be set down for a period of time. Or maybe it is an actual activity like Facebook or your phone, or zoning out in front of Netflix. That's what I do. And I want us to think about luxurating in saying yes. That a yes to an invitation to do something could actually be a real joy instead of a burden of, oh, I really want to say yes, but I have to say no to all these other things. Or I really want to say yes because I feel guilted into it, or I feel kind of obligated to do it. And that's not what I'm describing. I want you to find something that you could say yes to that would feel like a luxury to get to do, to spend your time in that way. This is, and I offer this also as a person, that I have a lot of complicated stuff in my life, and I know a lot of us do. Particularly if you have a young family and you have kids at home that need a lot of attention all the time. A friend of mine who has two kids under the age of 5 says that he is toddler tired. And that's a different kind of tired from any other kind of tired, because there's certain things that take up our lives for a season. I'm currently looking to buy a house in the area, and it's taking up a lot of my energy. And I'm having this attitude, I'm finding, where I see myself as, once we buy that house, once we get moved into that house, once we kind of jump over this hurdle, then I'll be able to take Sabbath, you know. Then it'll be calmer. And I remember, my friend who was toddler tired talking about, you know, in 3 or 4 years, I won't be toddler tired. I'll jump over that hurdle, and they'll be in elementary school, and it'll be a different kind of tired, but I'll be able to take Sabbath then. And whatever your hurdle is right now, you might be in a season that it just feels like I couldn't possibly, but I could maybe 2 or 3 months from now. I want you to see this kind of baby step as working within that and not denying that, you know, you do have some interruptions to life. But doesn't put off Sabbath for 3 months from now. God offers us ways that creative love that is always working in the world, that hesed, that covenant that God has with all of creation, to provide avenues for us to enter into Sabbath now, even when it feels most impossible. So I want to offer this video as a kind of example of, and her example is being in a young family, and how is Sabbath something that they are in right in the midst of it, instead of crossing that hurdle to do it later.
When I speak to groups about the book, the most common question I get asked is, do we still do Sabbath? Now that the experiment is over, have we kept up the practice? After all, our kids are older now than they were during the time of the Sabbath experiment.
My name is Caroline, and I'm 10 years old.
My name is Margaret, and I'm 7 years old.
My name is James, and I'm 5 years old.
And as kids get older, they get involved in more and more things.
I like to play the piano and sing, and
I'm on the swim team, and
I like to play with Legos, and I like to
have play dates with my friends.
I also like to play the cello, and I swim in a swim team.
I like to build houses.
I like to dance, I like to sing,
and a helicopter.
I like to play the piano
and this airplane.
You get a award?
awards at the end of the season, and I got the coach's award this season.
And I also are in a Girl Scout troop, and I like doing that because I get to learn a bunch of camping skills that are really nice to know.
Not to mention all the random stuff that takes up the typical weekend.
I have to clean up a room. That's one of my chores I have to do.
Cleaning the litter box on Saturday.
Cleaning up the litter box.
Sometimes we fold the clothes and put them in the washing machine and dryer.
I have to make sure everything is off the floor, like toys and clothes.
My dad mows the lawn.
To the grocery store because, you know, we have to get milk because we're always running low on milk.
Then dinner is over, I put away my dishes.
We have to go to the vet to get my cat's Maya's medicine.
But the answer is yes, we absolutely still do Sabbath. But it looks different than it did. Sometimes it's a Friday night, Saturday morning. Sometimes it's Sunday afternoon after we get home from church. Sometimes it's the 2 hours between the swim meet and the birthday party. Sometimes we go a few weeks without a Sabbath, and we always feel it when we do that. Sabbath looks different as our family changes. It's imperfect, but you know what? It's always been imperfect. Sometimes we think we have to do something the right way, and if we can't do it right, we don't do it at all. But our lives are not set up for perfection. I have a picture above my desk of a little girl drawing, completely absorbed in her artwork. And it says, "Today is their childhood." It's my reminder not to take for granted the gift of each day. As our children age and mature, that reminder becomes even more important.
Sabbath is a stay-home day.
So we just like have time to talk with each other and we play the piano.
Sabbath is friends and family.
And we kind of spend time together, so that like strengthens our bond.
I like just being with my family, no matter where I am or what I'm doing.
For us, Sabbath is a vital part of our life together.
And that sounds so good. Every time you play it, it's getting better.
So this experiment that they did in her family was to just completely suspend work for 24 hours, and she wrote about it. And I will give you her name and the name of the book if you'd like to read it. But it's called Sabbath in the Suburbs. Sabbath in the Suburbs is the name of the book. And like she said in the video, they had to kind of redefine what Sabbath looked like. You know, when she wrote the book and when it was like, we're really doing this, it was for a 24-hour period. But now that they're so busy, she has had to kind of shift a little bit. And I love what her daughter said, and I love that all three of these kids kind of had some buy-in into, we do Sabbath. And one, I think it was the middle daughter, said, Sabbath is friends and family. So simply spending time having kind of family day or friends and family day at home. Really, I mean, it just sounds so perfect to me. And I realize that it's not perfect. That even in the midst of Sabbath, we have things that interrupt and things that need to get done. And yet, you know, what a beautiful witness to give to your children, or, you know, if you don't have kids at home, your spouse, or, you know, the people in your life, that this is something that we can all participate in together. It's not, you know, mom goes off to the hammock and sits in the backyard and she's sort of sequestered by herself. This is Sabbath as we all practice it together. So as kind of a final blessing, and then I kind of want to hear what you all have to say. I'd like you to, on your card, this is just an invitation. I thought, I do really well if I have like kind of a little card that I can stick somewhere. I put it on my nightstand. You might want to tape this up on your dashboard of your car or stick it in your wallet, whatever works for you. This is the daily prayer as a part of this practice of saying yes and saying no. Teach us to number our days that we might receive a heart of wisdom. I want you to pray that every day. If you can, in the morning when you first wake up, that before the day begins. And one more kind of obscure Hebrew word for you. I discovered that this, so this is from Psalm 90, and that word, teach us to number our days. Number, the transliteration of that in Hebrew is pronounced limnavot, and it's the same kind of word. It's not necessarily meant, I mean, it does mean count, but it also has kind of a connotation of take stock of. Another time in the Old Testament where this turns up, where this word turns up, is when God is speaking to Abram about how he is going to become Abraham, and he and Sarah are going to have so many children, so many descendants that they will number the stars. And the verse is something like, you know, if you were able to count every single grain of sand in the world, that's how many your descendants will be. So that's kind of the same word to number that turns up here in this psalm. So this is not just simply sitting down with your calendar and parsing out, like, how many days has it been since, or, you know, kind of that holy guilt trip. This is taking the long view, taking stock of how God has blessed you with your days and with your time. In a sense, getting a sense of perspective so that we might gain that heart of wisdom, that heart of gratitude to God. And I think from that spirit comes the sense of courage and priority that gives us the freedom to say yes and to say no with joy and as a spiritual practice. So those two things, pray this prayer and think about what you can say yes to and what you can say no to. Are there any questions at all that you might have? Or any reactions? Anyone think this is just impossible? It is a prioritizing, absolutely, yeah. And sometimes it may come down to have to say no to something good, to have to put down something that is actually quite worthy, but maybe is not your calling to pursue, you know? Something that prevents you from resting in God. Because we're not called to be just constantly just exhausted and constantly driven to do more and to be more. We don't have to be more. God is all. God is all that we need. And God has given us everything that we need. And so this kind of constant urge in us to be more and to do more and to produce more is us stepping into the role of God, which that is kind of connecting to that quote from Wendell Berry about being blasphemy, that we're stepping into a role that we're not meant to have. And rest, Sabbath rest, puts us back in right relationship with God. So, the other. I want you to do that this week and then come back next week and we will talk about what it was like. Thank you so much for being here this morning.